Hello and welcome to this Innovation Agency podcast with me, Caroline Kenyon. We're going to talk today about staff well-being during the pandemic with someone who's created a whole system of support, including an SOS room and more than 100 well-being champions to spot people in need of help. So welcome, Nicole Williams, and thank you for taking part in the podcast. And Nicole, you're Deputy Director of Organisational Development at Wigan, Wrightington and Lee, NHS Foundation Trust, but you've not always worked in the NHS, have you? What were you doing before and what led you into the health service?
Yeah, so I've worked in the NHS for about 7 years now, maybe just over 7 years, and just for this trust. Before that, I worked in both in private sector. I've worked in consultancy. I'm an occupational psychologist by background, so I did a lot of work with many different organisations, supporting them, particularly around staff wellbeing and employee engagement. That's kind of the area I specialised in. And what kind of led me into that really was, if I go right back to when I graduated from university and was thinking about what I wanted to do. I did a psychology degree, so I considered going into becoming a forensic psychologist. Actually, I went and worked at a prison for over the summer months. So I volunteered with the forensic psychologist on a Friday, and then Monday to Thursday I needed money, so I went and worked in the administration office, and I ended up being much more interested in actually the dynamics of an office environment and working with colleagues and teams and the dynamics and relationships with managers. I just found that far more interesting than working with the prisoners. So it completely changed my direction. And I ended up going on to do a master's in occupational psychology, and then later getting a number of different jobs and then getting my registration. So that's kind of what led me into this path, really. And the NHS has been somewhere I've really enjoyed working for the last few years. My husband's also a consultant radiologist, so he's always shown me what it's like from the frontline aspect as he's progressed through his training as a doctor. So it's just great to be involved in that environment, that industry, and make a contribution.
So your husband piqued your interest about working in the NHS, didn't he? What was he saying about NHS staff culture that intrigued you and made you interested in working in the NHS?
Well, I think we've known each other for a number of years. So when he started as a junior doctor, from that point onwards, really, it was interesting his progression. And he worked in A&E, he worked in GP practices, he worked on wards, and I got a real sense of the dedication, the commitment that NHS staff provide, all the different multidisciplinaries having to work together, and just such a values-based organisation, I think, was fascinating for me, because I'd worked a lot in private sector, so, you know, slightly different kind of sense of purpose in private sector, but also the challenges, I think, and having to do so much on limited resources, I think, was for me fascinating and interesting. And I felt there was so much to be achieved in from an organisational development point of view in the NHS, so that's what really interested me. And I've enjoyed being part of that NHS family since I've joined.
So we're going to talk about your work with staff wellbeing during the pandemic. But first, can you just recap for us what it was like when you joined your trust, and then what changes you brought about?
Yeah, so when I joined, I've just been working in consultancy, and again, working with lots of different types of organisations. Not just NHS, and I wanted to kind of get back into an in-house role, because I think you end up, when you're in consultancy, you end up doing short periods of work for companies and going in and then stepping away, and you can't really influence things as much. So I wanted to get back into an in-house role where I could see something through to the long term. And this role came up at WWL, which was a staff engagement lead role. And I just thought that that's absolutely the right role for me to go for. And it was very much around trying to build and develop how they engage their staff. It was quite a new role at the time for the NHS. There's lots of roles like that out there now. But I joined, and the trust was in a relatively good place. It had come from a more challenged place previously, being at the bottom end of staff engagement, and one of the trusts least likely to be recommended as a place to work. And they'd made some progress, but when I joined, I did a lot of work to do some cultural analytical work, try and regularly measure trends of engagement and well-being over time. And that's something we've carried on since 2013. We still do that now. But also implement things that were going to make the biggest impact. Everything from how you recognise staff, not just through intrinsic rewards, but intrinsically. So how do you make them feel valued and appreciated, to how you help them feel listened to and involved? How do you create a sense of clarity that staff know what's going on in the organisation? How do you help build optimism and positivity about the future? How do you support line managers to drive engagement and well-being in their own areas? So lots of work around that. And over a few years, actually, we managed to improve our engagement levels. We ended up around kind of 20, sort of 14, 15 time. We were in the top 10% of NHS trusts to be recommended as a place to work. So that was a great place. Great improvement that we made over that time, and I can't take the credit for that. I think that's the hard work that the trust put in to driving that agenda. But things have changed over the years as well since then. We've had to constantly adapt what we prioritise, where we focus our efforts, and COVID-19 being one of those things that have given us more focus in recent times about what we need to do to help maintain engagement, and in particular support staff wellbeing, because that's the one area that we're really concerned about over a long period of time, how staff are going to be impacted from a wellbeing perspective with all the demands and pressures that are on them with COVID-19.
How would you describe the impact of the pandemic this last year on staff wellbeing?
I think it's been, I suppose it's drawn focus to it more, wellbeing, that wellbeing agenda. So I can't say that we never had issues around staff wellbeing before COVID-19, because we did. There was a lot of stuff related to sickness absence, and that, you know, every winter we go through NHS pressures. And that has an impact on staff. So that was something we were trying to work on and build and improve. But COVID-19 has drawn real attention to it, and it's almost exacerbated the existing pressures that are already there. Staff have been further stretched, they've been further challenged. And certainly early on in the pandemic, what we were seeing was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of anxiety. So people, for example, were very concerned about how not having PPE, for example. I would talk to staff who would come and see me, extremely concerned about not having PPE, being exposed and potentially putting their life at risk, or their families' lives at risk as well, because it was all very much unknown how things were going to pan out at that point. Even people feeling claustrophobic to put a mask on. You know, these are things we don't really think about, but people having to change the way they work very quickly in a very uncertain and quite scary time. More recently, I'd say people have got used to the changes, the different ways of working. You know, everybody's used to wearing a mask now, working with PPE, whilst it's still uncomfortable and difficult. But people are exhausted, they're tired. They've been going through this for a long period of time now. There was a lot of NHS support early on, which I think helps people get through that first wave. Now people are at a point where they're tired from the first wave, they're still getting through this peak in activity. They're hopeful that there's a light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine. But, you know, it's concerning about how much longer can they keep going for, really.
And of course, staff, like the rest of us, are seeing people fall ill and die in the hospital and are losing relatives and friends from COVID. So even if they're not working on the front line or in critical care, for instance, they're suffering psychologically. How do you reach everybody who's been affected?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to make, actually, that this affects staff holistically. So they're not just affected by the environment they're working in. They're also going through their own personal difficulties and challenges, everything from losing or knowing people who have succumbed to COVID-19, or themselves, their families getting it, being worried about it, having to deal with childcare challenges, all those things that lots of other people in the country are dealing with, but they're dealing on top of the job that they're doing. And it is difficult to reach out and access everybody. We've had to do a lot of work to put more provision in place that is accessible to staff if and when they need it. So one of the things you did mention at the beginning was our SOS rooms. That was something we implemented quite early on, and we're still running. So these are safe spaces that any member of staff can access. And we have virtual SOS rooms as well, but it's a safe space, and people can come in and drop in. There'll be somebody in the room who we've trained. So we have governance processes around this, on who we train and what skills they have, and to almost have what we call a diffusing conversation. So somebody might come into the room and talk about something that's upsetting them or distressing them. They could be upset, they might just want to offload. That person, that volunteer in the room, will be able to help that person express how they're feeling, and then help signpost, help them think about how they might help themselves, what coping strategies have they got available to them, who could they go and talk to, what are they going to go and do after they leave that room when they go back on shift, what can they do to help themselves when they get home from a shift. So it's a bit like an emotional cool down, and those rooms were really well utilized, certainly on in the first wave, and they're still being utilized now, but the challenge is always staff being able to access the rooms as well and be able to take that break and that time out, because clearly they're dedicated to supporting their patients as well. And, you know, trying to get staff to sometimes put themselves first, to say, right, to support your patients you need to take the time out for yourself to support yourself, that's always the challenge as well.
Now, that's part of a scale of support, isn't it? A whole range of support. Can you tell us what else you're providing and how you've structured it so that you give people what they need at different levels of need?
Yeah, so what we did was we've pulled together what we call a stepped care approach, a stepped care model. So, and again, I haven't worked on this in isolation. We have a team here who support some of this, based involves clinical psychologists as well, and it's a bit like a pyramid. So at the foundation level, what we're trying to do is preventative, proactive work. That could be anything from going out and reaching out to staff, going and seeing them on the wards, going and talking to them, signposting, etc. We call that the in-reach work. Providing resources, self-help resources, information, psychoeducation, which is really important. And we also have our wellbeing champions, who we have 100 of, over 100 and again, who can offer, we've trained in psychological first aid, but can signpost again. And we have a number of wellbeing leads in the organisation as well that do walkabouts with staff. So that's the preventative, proactive level. But then as we move up the pyramid, we look at more mild and moderate distress. So the mild level could be somebody dropping into an SOS ream for some support. It could be right up to moderate level, we could be doing some reflective group practice. So, for example, we've just supported a group of sonographers. You might not immediately think about being impacted by COVID, but actually they have, because they've found it incredibly difficult to provide the level of service they would like under the conditions.
Just remind us, what does a sonographer do?
So sonographers do baby scans, pregnancy scans. So they will scan pregnant women at 12 weeks and around 20 weeks. And normally in a scan, you would have a pregnant woman would be able to bring a partner to that scan. But under COVID restrictions, they weren't able to do that or not able to do it in the same way as normal. And that's difficult for sonographers because if in particular, if they have a difficult scan or something unfortunate has happened to that pregnancy and they have to feed that back, that individual doesn't have their partner with them. It can be very distressing and upsetting. And that sonographer is taking all of that on board. So we've run some reflective group practice with them to just talk about their experiences, how they found that, how they found dealing with the patients in that situation, because it's been quite an emotional burden for them. So that's kind of an example, yeah, of a reflective practice that we do. We also do some trauma work as well. So we've got some specific methodologies to use if people have experienced something particularly traumatic. And we've got great work intervention there as well. But then we also, right up to the top level of this pyramid, is the severe level distress. Now, in normal times, obviously, you're always going to have some levels of severe difficulty or distress within the staff workforce. But this has become particularly exacerbated by COVID because people may have had some underlying mental health conditions that have emerged with the additional pressures they're under. The evidence is suggesting from the professional bodies in this area that we are likely to see PTSD over the coming months and years emerge. So that's why we need to have a robust plan in place for providing support around severe mental health and distress. And that's something in particular we're trying to work on at the moment to future-proof our services in the longer term.
So it's important, isn't it, that the trust as an organisation is aware of the impact on staff and actually makes effort, as you said before, to reach out and find the people who need the help. So that can see the wellbeing champions playing a really important role here. Do they then connect back to the trust to feedback what they're finding? So you're able to measure and get a sense of how big the problems are, how many people have been affected, what else you might need to do. Is that all being fed back so you can monitor it?
Absolutely. That's really important because COVID-19 is something, it's new. We've not dealt with a pandemic before. We don't know how the pandemic is going to play out over the longer term. We can hazard a guess, but we don't know for sure. And we don't know for sure how it will impact on the mental health and well-being of our staff. So we had to make a bit of a proof of concept proposal really about investing in this further in the first wave. But we almost need to now at this point say, what do we need longer term? So in order to do that, we've had to constantly measure and evaluate the services we're putting in place. So we look at the level of demand, how many people, who's accessing them. If they can't access them, what's the barriers to that? We're looking at also what's their satisfaction? Are they getting what they need from those services? So I think early on in the pandemic, the feedback was has been very good, but as we've progressed, people have needed higher levels of provision, just because their needs are increasing. So again, that's indicating to us that yes, whilst it's great to have SOS rooms, we need to be developing more further sophisticated levels of services or signposting or pathways for those staff that need it. And we're also looking at impacts on things like stress-related sickness absence. So we measure sickness absence in the NHS anyway. And we can break that down by stress-related sickness absence, although not everybody discloses that when they're off sick. But we did have indication that the stress-related sickness absence was going up quite significantly in the first wave of the pandemic. So we were, in our trust, we were around 1.25% sickness absence before stress-related sickness absence before COVID. That went up to about 2% during the first wave. It came down around September. By September, it came down nearly to pre-COVID levels, around 1.4%. It's now back up to about 1.8% at the moment. So it's creeping back up. It's not the same peak that it was, which might be, again, a sign that something's working. But again, we don't want that to be a continuing trend. So we need to address that and try and manage that as best as possible. But we're also considering whether we believe, from the other feedback that we receive, is that actually some people are just continuing and carrying on, even though they are exhausted, depleted, their resilience thresholds might only last so long. So when will we start to see the knock-on effect of that? Will we start to see the sickness absence increase, perhaps in a recovery period, a few months down the line? So this is all kind of a bit of hypothetical prediction, really, some of this as well. But we have to try and be as prepared as we possibly can, because the implications on our workforce are quite significant. If we lose people through further absence, or people even leaving the profession, which is concerning as well, we need to be prepared for that as best as we can.
And what about the individuals who are benefiting from the support you've put in place? Do you hear back from them, you know, personal experiences of how it may have made the difference between carrying on in work or not carrying on in work or looking for other help? Do you hear that from people?
We do. We have some really great feedback for some of the resources we put in place. So just the other day, our clinical psychologist had some feedback from a lady who she'd done some group work with, and she was going to kind of follow up with a one-to-one with her, and she popped into an SOS room and spoke to one of our volunteers there, and she said, actually, I had a really good conversation with the volunteer. I feel so much better. I feel like actually I don't need to take up more of your time. I'm able to go back to work and carry on, and I'm, you know, thank you so much. And again, you know, lots of examples of people who have accessed the support and fed back and said, you know, how it's helped them just get through that point in time. And we know as well that some of this is preventative, so it can help somebody just feel like they've got a bit more resources, coping strategies, ways to adapt to the area they're working, or ways of coping with what they're going through. That doesn't automatically mean they need to just go off sick with stress or try and struggle through. So that is really pleasing to hear that, when we do get that feedback.
And you've trained more than 100 wellbeing leads. Is there anything you can take from that training to advise all people managing staff, you know, things to bear in mind, any sort of top tips you might say to a manager of a group of staff, you know, always be there to listen, or I don't know what it may be. Do you advise people on how to have conversations with their staff? Is there any way that you can help people be better managers at a stressful time like this?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think any NHS trust that's trying to set up their own wellbeing provision, what you don't want it to become is this dependency on a team or a group of people, where anybody's got an issue or problem, they're just directed to that team to try and address. So our team is called Steps for Wellness. The Steps for Wellness team are there to support and provide support to staff. But another big role they play is actually enabling and equipping and mobilising staff, and particularly managers in their own areas, to try and create good environments around wellbeing and compassion as well. So, for example, we developed a very, very quick online e-learning course. It was 30 minutes to do, and we worked with a professional provider to do this, but it's based around just a post-shift check-in. So it's a three-step process, a bit like the diffusing method that we use in the SOS rooms, but what a manager or a team lead or anybody actually working in a clinical environment under pressure, or doctors, you have to be clinical, it could be non-clinical. At the end of a shift, bring people together on a voluntary basis. You don't force people to do it, but bring them together and you go through, allow people to say how they've experienced that shift, what they found difficult, what they found challenging. And again, okay, at the end of that check-in, right, so what are you going to do to help support yourself? How can we support each other for the next day? You know, just again, a very quick and easy framework for doing that check-in. And it sounds really obvious, and people in areas will be doing this, but sometimes people are a bit unsure, am I saying the right thing? Should I be asking that question? Should I be prying? Am I prying if I ask this? So this tool, this training, just gives some really good kind of phrases to use and questions to ask, so people can feel a bit more confident about running that post-shift check-in. So that's something, that's an example of, again, how we would be trying to equip areas to improve wellbeing themselves. It doesn't need a dedicated person from the Steps for Wellness team to come up every day and start doing lots of mindfulness or wellbeing practice with them.
Sounds great. That's been amazing. It's really wonderful to hear about all that you've put in place. Very comprehensive. Just to finish our conversation, would you have any top tips for other trusts if they were going to pick up on what you've been doing at Writington Wigan and Lee, on what you've learned in the last year and what you would advise them to think about to improve their staff wellbeing?
I would say it's about being proactive and being one step ahead of the game, really. I think there's some really, really good resources being provided both nationally and locally to support staff wellbeing, and they're fantastic, and things that organisations should be tapping into. Things like the Resilience Hub in Manchester, for example. And we certainly will be tapping into that as a resource to signpost people to. But there's something about local level provision as well. So people being able to access something quickly and immediately. And it's worth the investment up front now, before this becomes a problem in the longer term. So don't wait for it to become an issue down the line. Be prepared for it now. I know there's lots of new posts coming up at the moment around staff psychological support, and lots of clinical psychologists being recruited into these posts. And again, I think those are the organisations, again, are thinking ahead and thinking about what do we need. So be strategic about it. See it as a long-term part of that organisation's strategy, because when COVID, hopefully it's gone and we've moved on and we've recovered, actually the staff will still be in quite a long-term recovery process. And so it could have knock-on effects to how operationally we work, how well we can provide to our patients and our communities with the resources and staff that we have in place post-COVID. So start kind of preparing for it now is what I would say, and I think that's helped us a lot in thinking ahead for the future.
That sounds like really wise advice. Thank you. So thank you so much, Nicole Williams, Writington Wigan and Lee NHS Foundation Trust. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Yeah. If you'd like to find out more about resources available for staff wellbeing, we'll have them on the podcast page and also on the Innovation Agency website if you look for our Coaching Academy. Thank you for listening.